Today is the 9th of September 2019. It's also the 9th day of Elul, Tavshin Ayin Tes. We're up to Musar Day, the last day that we at least cover for now, Perek Lamed Beis, although we will return to these topics. The topic of B'nai Gad B'nai Reuven does show up again over the course of the Book of Devarim, so we'll fill in some blanks as we go along. But the main thing here, so when all the dust settles, when all the dust settles, what's the story with Gad and Reuven? Do we like what they did, or do we not like what they did? Do we say, Sabru says no. I'm not saying we as like the fans following at home. Like, what about Hashem? What is Hashem's, or Moshe, right? So if you follow the story, it actually becomes ambiguous. I mean, they make a request. Moshe is not happy with the request. Right, then they clarify. And then they follow through on what they said they were going to do, right? So then you're left a little bit ambiguous. Maybe Moshe was only getting upset at the original request, the way he understood it. But once everything was okay, so Moshe's like, all right, I guess that makes sense. Particularly if we assume the way we learned on Friday, when you weren't here. When we learned on Friday that potentially they stood to have that section of Gad and Reuven, at least from Moshe's perspective, those sections were actually going to be part of Eretz Yisrael. Right, and we'll just mention it now, the Sfas Emes comments that they were coming and requesting that land, that was going to be their land. Now, the Sfas Emes is Chassidisha Torah there, but that's what he said. This was, they were actually asking for what their Nachala was supposed to be.
How come that they were never mentioned as one of the nations that we had to kick out?
Who? No, it was. They were Amorites. They were. That actually was land. In fact, we studied a little, came across something, as I say it over, I might recall what it was, that it was Or HaChaim or the Ramban. Somebody made a comment that why is it that it's only by the Midianites, when they took on the Midianites, that we learn about the requirement to kasher the Kalim and to bring them to the mikvah. Why, they had already fought Sichon and Og. They had already, this land where Gad and Reuven was going to settle, that land was conquered in Parshas Chukas. It was conquered earlier already. So why when they, so presumably when they conquered that land, there was no ban on the spoils. That was a different war. There was no ban on the spoils. They brought the spoils back. So why only when they took on Midian did we have to learn about koshering the vessels? Why didn't we learn about koshering the vessels already in Parshas Chukas two Parshios earlier? Right, it's a good question. Right, so the answer that was given is because that was considered a milchemes mitzvah, part of actually kivush haaretz, part of already conquering the quest they were taking on the Amorites. That was considered part of conquering the land, as opposed to the Midianites. That was just a war of avengement, not having to do with conquering the land. Okay, so what is that? What does that change anything? So there is a halacha. We will learn it as we go through Devarim, that food that was conquered while conquering Eretz Yisrael from those nations was permissible to eat even if it wasn't kosher. Even at what's called kadli d'chaziri, even the necks of the pigs, they were able to eat completely non-kosher food as they conquered the land of Israel. I mean, they came in, and the pasuk says, you will find batim aleim kol tuv. You'll find houses that are filled with all types of goodness. So I think it's only talking about the seven species, things like that, fruits, vegetables. No, it was even talking about their meat. They were even permitted to eat their meat. So I already have a halacha day planned for that, because, what? Yeah, woe is right. So Gemara does refer to this already. But there was, during the war in 48, so there was the British had this, there was obviously a meat shortage, there was a shortage of everything in Israel, and the British had this canned meat that they were using, they were consuming. And the Shaila was, could the Jews eat that meat, especially once the British left and left all their stuff behind, could the Jews eat that meat as a din in Kadli de Chaziri? Could the Jews eat that meat that, because we're conquering the land, this is part of Melchemes Mitzvah, this is part of Kivush Haaretz, conquering the land, can we eat that land, can you eat that meat? And I believe Rav Gorin Rav Gurion, who already at that time was paskening shilas for David Ben Gurion as the it was, I don't think he was officially the chief rabbi of the IDF, but he was certainly advising. I don't remember what exactly his position is. So he discusses this in his autobiography that he permitted it to a limited extent to eat that meat based off of that din. Okay, so that then brings us all the way back here. So this was land conquered from the seven nations, and perhaps this was even supposed to be where Reuven and Gad were going to end up anyways, even without that request. That's what some suggest. So, however, the Medrash makes a comment, though. The Medrash in Midbar says, V'china tamotzi b'vnei Gad v'nei Reuven shayu ashirim v'ayal mikna gadlo v'chivavo es mamonam v'yeshvu lehem chutz me'aretz Yisrael. That because of their love of their money, they ended up living outside of Eretz Yisrael. L'fichach galu techila mikol hashvatim. Therefore, they were megala. Therefore, they had galus. They went into galus prior to the other tribes, as the pasuk says in Divrei. The Medrash quotes a pasuk in Divrei Yamim, "Vayigalem l'Ruvenu l'Gadi lochatzi shevet haManasseh." That Reuven and Gad went into exile first, and what caused them? Says the Medrash, "Al shehefrishu atzman min acheihem b'shvil kinyanim," because they separated themselves from their brothers on behalf of their kinyanim, on behalf of things they wanted to acquire. And where do we see that? From the fact that they went to Moshe and said, we have a lot of stuff. Right? That is what the Medrash comments. So clearly the Medrash is on the side of saying that we don't appreciate the request of Gad and Reuven as to what they wanted to do. Yeah, so he quotes, so Rabbi Simon, this Sefer quotes from, where is it there? Quotes from Rav Menachem Mendel of Kusov, so this requirement, this need that B'nai Gad, B'nai Reuven had, so that places them as being, we look bad upon them. We say that they put their desires for their material wealth, or the sustenance and the protection of their material wealth, they put it above other things. So where do we see that that is a midah of rishus? So he first quotes from the story of Esav, right? Esav is perhaps the clearest example, where Esav and Yaakov are talking. Esav says, I have a lot of stuff. And Yaakov says, I have everything that I need. Right, so that is a keyword to point to, that Rishayim are the ones who say that I have a lot of stuff, but there's always going to be a desire to have more. So he goes on and says, so what is the midah? How could one specifically label the bad midah? What midah was it? So he says, he suggests this for Menachem Mendel, that there were two beis midos raos. Achsu b'midas harishayim, shirotim dafku b'mikne rav, lohotim tamid, achar zeh v'zera achas. The fact that they were constantly seeking their aid for their material wealth, that is already one thing that's bad. But also there is another bad thing. B'meshalo ratzu limsu There's two midos. One is putting your desires, your material desires over everything else, and the second mida is not being willing to be moser it, not being willing to give it up in order to assist others, and that is part of, we have a very famous drasha having to do with that, right? And that's what you say in Shema, Be'haftas Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshcha b'chol miyodecha. And there are people that have, so with regards to people who care about themselves more than their money, therefore it says b'chol nafshcha. And if there are people, Shemamonam chaveva lav migufu, that their mamon is more important to them than their guf, therefore it says b'chol miyodecha. Right, about, that they didn't want to give up on any of their stuff in order to do good things for others. In fact, that this idea of being sameach b'chelko, that is what he quotes here from the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer says that the pasuk says in Ashrei, poseiches yadecha u'maspia l'chol chai ratzon. Right? Why does it could just say, "Poseiches yadecha," open your hand, Umaspia l'chol chai, provides sustenance to all living things. What is biratzon, l'chol chai ratzon? That not just all living things, but the desires of all living things. That Hashem provides for all of what should be the desires of all people. That He promised everybody that they will be sustained. And also that they should, but and also the ability to be able to be sameach b'chelko. It's just the people's requirement that they be able to go and attempt to achieve that. And just one more point that he raises here, and then we'll get on to an additional issue that's brought up by the Sifsei Chaim, that the Gemara tells us, this is a Gemara that we discussed last week in Shul, the concept of aser ta'aser. This was in Parshas Re'eh 2 weeks ago, aser ta'aser. We also lean it on the last day of Yontif, when it falls out on Shabbos, or in Shmini Atzeres, that one should that one will separate their meiser. But what is the idea of the double language? The Gemara tells us, aser bishvil shetis aser, that you're going to take meiser so that you will become wealthy. And this is the source for the idea, the Gemara says, that one is permitted to test Hashem, so to speak, and say, I'm hereby going to give tzedakah, and I expect that I'll be able to see something in return. Right now, what exactly does that mean? So most people say it over is that, yeah, you can demand. You can demand and say, I'm giving this, and I expect that this is going to be paid up. Now, you never really know how it's going to be paid up. We learned this. This is actually the very first siman in Hilchos Tzedakah in Shulchan Aruch. It discusses this halacha is mentioned, and it just quotes it. Yeah, one is permitted to test Hashem. Now, it's a question whether it's a good idea, not good idea, what that means exactly. So the way people just say it over, certainly in Musar Shmuzin, is, yeah, you can test Hashem for this. So when we learned this in the Shulchan Aruch Shir on Monday night a couple of months ago already at this point, one of the members of the Shir asked, well, how will you ever know? I mean, let's say I give a significant amount of tzedakah, and I say, and I expect to get it back. So then all of a sudden I get a few more customers for to buy mezuzahs off of me, right? So is that, so do I then say, oh, I guess that was it? Right, I guess, or it turns out a lot more people's mezuzahs were puzzle, right? Something like that, right? So then we are able to sell a lot more, right? So did I just say, oh, well, that's it? Well, how do I know? Maybe it's just that maybe that's happenstance. How does one ever able to label it that way? So when I was in Eretz, this is already a few months ago, so I was in Eretz Yisrael a few months ago, I asked a couple people that I met. I wasn't able to get any clear answers. However, in Nefesh Harav is the, I don't want to say memoirs, but the discussion that Rav Shechter has about his Rebbe, the things that he brings down from Rav Soloveitchik. So he quotes Rav Soloveitchik as saying that, no, it's not that tzedakah, one has the right to demand it and you can test Hashem. It's that with tzedakah, that's the only thing you're permitted to request things off of. That I'm hereby doing this and I expect some type of bracha. Now, I would like a bracha in exchange. So what's the classic place where that takes place?
The
Misha Berachs, exactly. The Misha Berachs are built on that. That's why you can have a Misha Berach for tzedakah and not for other things. And it tells a story that when Rav Soloveitchik once had an apartment in the yeshiva, and he would daven in one of the yeshiva minyanim during the week. I don't think he davened in the base batteries. He davened in one of the NYU, and a lot of the dorms have like minyanim that take place in the lobbies in the morning. So he went to a different one than he normally went to for some reason. And he said, oh, the Rav's here, let's give him an aliyah. So he's a lady, so they gave him an aliyah. It was like a Monday morning, and the Gabbai was so excited, so he said, oh, we're going to give him a Misha Berach. So he starts going to Misha Berach like on a Monday morning. Oh, I guess it probably would have been a Thursday morning. On a Thursday morning, and Rav Soloveitchik is like, well, if you can do a Misha Berach for me, then I have to give money. Right, so he said, all right, I guess I'm giving tzedakah, bavur, so that I'll be able to give, tzedakah. So that's what's going on. So aser bishvil shetisas. So that's an interesting issue. Maybe we'll discuss a little bit more when we get up to Dvarim Perek Yudalit. But many Rishonim say comment on that, especially even on the page of Shulchan Aruch. That's not talking about regular giving tzedakah. It's talking about giving meiser. that specifically when you give meiser, when you tithe, that's when you're permitted to make these requests. So why is that? What is the story there? Because if that's the case, so you're recognizing that I don't need everything. That's the mitzvah of meiser, that Hashem has given me a lot, and I have what I need while following the mitzvahs, even though I'm even going to be giving up things that I actually have. And that is difficult to do. That perhaps represents a failure of the B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven, at least the way that it's described in the Medrash. So that Medrash is also brought down by the Sifsei Chaim, and he quotes it a little bit further. He quotes that Medrash, that they had a lot, and he says, he says that there's three gifts that are given into this world. If you are merit wisdom, so then you have whatever you need. If you merit strength, you have whatever you need. And if you merit wealth, so then you have whatever you need. So what does that mean? So the Medrash continues, but he says, when is it? Only when those three things are gifts from Hashem. And they come with the strength of Torah. Aval gvuraso, the ashro, shel basar adam, eino klumot. If it's just the wealth and it's just the strength of regular people, so that's meaningless. So the Friedlander asks, well, wait a second. What did that just say? If you have wealth from Hashem, so then you have whatever you need. But if it's wealth from basar adam, so then it doesn't count. So, wait a second. How can one achieve wealth that's from basar v'dam? How could one achieve wealth that's not from Hashem? Doesn't it mean that everything comes from Hashem? Right? So what does that mean, that one is going to have wealth that's not from Hashem? So he explains that kol ma she'esh l'adam, everything that a person has does come from Hashem. But a person has to recognize that that's the case. But if he doesn't draw the connection and say, oh, this gift that I have is coming from Hashem, so then he's not recognizing it as coming from Hashem. The same thing with strength and the same thing with wisdom. He has to, A, recognize that it's from Hashem, and the other thing that the Medrash is teaching, he has to recognize that it is for Hashem, that it is for that is in order to recognize that there's something that I must do with this in order to fulfill the ratzon, the desires, in order to fulfill the desires of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when a person is in the right frame of mind, so then they recognize that it is from Hashem, and they have to figure out a way to fulfill how are they supposed to take advantage of that in this world. So then he explains this very puzzling story that appears in a Medrash in Parshas Pekudei. The Medrash tells us the story of Rav Shimon ben Chalafta. Apparently, elsewhere it has similar stories with Rav Chanina ben Dosa. So, okay, one of them, that Erev Shabbos comes along. This is in Medrash Rabbi Shmos, Parsha Nun Beis, Sif Gimel, where he says, Erev Shabbos comes along, and he didn't have anything to eat. So, Yatzel lo chutz l'mir, so he goes outside the city, and he davens to Hashem. So, Menitas lo even tova min Hashemayim. Lo and behold, this beautiful jewel comes down, falls down from Shemayim, like, just like that. Right, so he goes and gives it to a money guy, right, the guy who stood by the tables, and he says, okay, so now I have food for Shabbos. So now he goes home. He's got he quickly runs. He gets a takeout from Savati, and he went to Savati and he told him, no, you need to have your orders in by Tuesday. Now he was able to get
3 hours.
What? No. He's able to get his food from Savati, and his wife says to him, where were you? Where did you get all the food? So he says, from Savati. He says, no, Amar Allah, mimash parnis HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem provided. So Amar, she says, im ein ata umar li mehechan hein eni toem es klum. She says, if you don't tell me where you got this from, I'm not eating. So Hidchil Mesabal, he starts telling her, Amar Allah, and he told her, "Kachnis palalti lifnei Elokim, and itan li min Hashemayim. I dive into Hashem. This is what I got. So Amar lo, any toem is I'm not tasting anything. I should tomer l'shachas zirena l'motzi Shabbos. I'm not tasting anything until you say you're going to return it motzi Shabbos. I'm a little unclear. I thought he did. He already exchanged it. Now he has the money. Not sure what happened there. But anyways, he says to her, Amar lo lam. He says, why? Amar lo. She says, atarotze she shulchancha chaser v'shulchan chavercha mali. She said, do you want that your table will be lessened so that other table will be full? What is she driving at? Meaning that you're using up your zechusim in Olam Haba by doing this. So he says, "V'halach Rabbi Shimon v'hodiya ma'isav Rabbi." So she goes and tells Rabbi about it. So he says, "Amar lo leichem or Allah im shulchani chaser eni amalacha mishali." So Rabbi says, "To tell her that if you don't have anything, I'm going to give from my own stuff." So which perhaps is also referring to Olam Haba, or maybe not. So Amar lo, so she says, "Leichi mi l'mishal melcha Torah." She says, "Come with me to the one who taught you Torah." And she actually eventually convinces him and gets him to give the stone back, whatever that means. He actually makes a comment, you know, these stones that come from the heaven, it's a lot easier to take it than to return it. Like, it's like returning an Amazon package sometimes, returning these stones, right? So it's not so easy to do. But what's going on there? I mean, what's the problem? All right, everything comes from Hashem, so it came from Hashem, and he's going to use it for a tzorech mitzvah. So Friedlander suggests because his job was to serve Hashem through his anius. His job was to serve Hashem through showing that he's okay with a little bit. So then if he's going to go ahead and take more, so then he's going to be using that which comes from Shemayim. As opposed to Rebbe, right? Rebbe appears in the story. Rebbe had everything. Rebbe was the wealthiest guy in the world, compared, you know, except for the Caesar, that kind of thing. So Rebbe had a different chilek, had a different thing to demonstrate in the world. And that's what was going on there with Shimon Bar Chalafta. So he adds in one more issue here. So then we turn back to B'nai Gad of B'nai Reuven, that was going to be their portion. True, that was going to be their portion, but they achieved it in the wrong way. If they would have either helped not said anything and waited for them to be able to get it, which eventually they would, and as we talked about Friday, it would eventually be contained as part of Eretz Yisrael even, right? So that would have been good. That means that Hashem is giving them a way to demonstrate their wealth. But when they demonstrated, when they went after their wealth, perhaps even at the expense of the rest of the Jewish people, right? So that messed up the program. That turned the program around, and that wasn't going to work. In fact, there's an odd line in the Gemara Maseches Chulin, when discussing the story. There's a story right before Yaakov fights with the angel of Esav. So he goes back across the river. It seems that's what's going on. He goes back across the river to get these pachim ketanim, these small things. And the Gemara makes a comment that tzaddikim chavav aleihem amonam yoser migufam. That tzaddikim, their money is more important than their guf. Meaning Yaakov was willing to go through danger in order to be able to to get his material needs. So the truth is that seems to go against everything else that we learn. How does one get that? In fact, when I was in yeshiva, so my rebbe used this as a whole musar shmooze to say that he shouldn't have gone back. Right? He had to reread the Gemara as a way that he shouldn't have gone back, that he compared Yaakov going back to get his stuff like a guy who's in the middle of night seder and goes to get a soda from across the street. Right? It just never works out. There's no continuation. But the simplest explanation of the Gemara is that they're praising Yaakov. So what does it mean you're praising Yaakov for putting himself in danger even to achieve material wealth? It's because of what he was going to do with that material wealth. That Yaakov was at the Madrega, that he was able to recognize that everything came from Hashem. He could recognize that everything came from Hashem. Then he would have what he needed, and he'd be able to, and not only would he recognize that it came from Hashem, but he would be using it towards Hashem. And if that's the case, so it's for tzaddikim who recognize the value of all these things for their avodas Hashem, for them, chavav aleihem amonam yoser migufam. If a regular person is not necessarily on that madriga, perhaps that same rule wouldn't apply. Okay, so stop here, and Mirz Hashem will pick up, I guess tomorrow, on the topic, next parak.